The reading is from 2 Samuel, chapter 12, verses 1 to 6. The Lord sent Nathan to David. When he came to him, he said, "There were two men in a certain town, one rich and the other one poor. The rich man had a very large number of sheep and cattle, but the poor man had nothing except one little ewe lamb that he had bought. He raised it, and it grew up with him and his children. It shared his food, drank from his cup, and even slept in his arms. It was like a daughter to him. Now a traveller came to the rich man, but the rich man refrained from taking one of his own sheep or cattle to prepare a meal for the traveller who had come to him. Instead, he took the ewe lamb that belonged to the poor man and prepared it for the one who had come to him. David burned with anger against the man and said to Nathan, 'As surely as the Lord lives, the man who did this must die. He must pay for that lamb four times over because he did such a thing and had no pity.'" Amen.
First of all, I must beg your forgiveness that if I start coughing during this sermon, I have got a cold. So I will try and turn away from the microphone and away from people if that happens. We're in the midst of a sermon series looking at fruitfulness on our front lines, how we can make a difference where we are. We've looked at modelling godly character, making good work, ministering grace and love, moulding culture, and today we're considering being a mouthpiece for truth and justice. If you've missed any of those sermons, most, if not all, of them are on our website if you want to revisit any of the themes. But today is Mouthpiece for Truth and Justice. And that sounds pretty scary. The kind of thing that Nelson Mandela did, or Martin Luther King, or Rosa Parks. Big stuff. Costly stuff. Scary stuff. But don't worry, to be a mouthpiece for truth and justice does not necessarily mean that you have to glue yourself to the M25 or throw orange powder over the nearest politician. I won't be handing out super glue after the service. But it does mean to take a stand, and that can be costly. When God sent Nathan to King David, it was a big deal. David had been known as a good king, a godly man. But he had gone wrong. And God wanted Nathan to go and point out to David the error of his ways so that he could find his way back to God. David had committed adultery with Bathsheba, the husband of Uriah. He'd been away fighting for David. So when Bathsheba fell pregnant, David tried to cover his sin. If we looked back to 2 Samuel 11, we can read, David sent the word to Joab, "Send me Uriah the Hittite." So Joab sent him to David. When Uriah arrived, David asked him how Joab and the army were getting along and how the war was progressing. Then he told Uriah, "Go home and relax." David even sent a gift to Uriah after he left the palace. But Uriah didn't go home. He slept that night at the palace entrance with the king's palace guards. When David heard that Uriah had not gone home, he summoned him and asked, "What's the matter? Why didn't you go home last night after being away for so long?" Uriah replied, "The ark and the armies of the Israel and Judah are living in tents, and Joab and my master's men are camping in open fields. How could I go home to wine and dine and sleep with my wife? I swear that I would never do such a thing." "Well, stay here today," David told him, "and tomorrow you may return to the army." So Uriah stayed with in Jerusalem the next day. Then David invited him to dinner and got him drunk. But even then he couldn't get Uriah to go home to his wife. Again he slept at the palace entrance with the king's palace guards. Uriah, an honourable man, had refused King David's attempts to get him to return to his wife, as it felt it would be wrong to take advantage of his position. And so he returned to the battle without seeing his wife. David's plan had failed. He was trying to cover up his sin so that no one would know about his adultery with Bathsheba. So instead he made a new plan. He sent a letter with Uriah to Jehob, which instructed him to place Uriah where the battle was at its fiercest, so that he would be killed. I don't think he said that in the letter, but you know what I mean. And that was his intention. Soon after, a messenger arrived to inform the king that Uriah had been killed in battle. When Uriah's wife heard that her husband was dead, she mourned for him. When the period of mourning was over, David sent for her, and he brought her to his palace, and she became one of his wives. Then she gave birth to a son. But the Lord was displeased with what David had done. So the Lord sent Nathan to David. Now, although Nathan was a prophet, it would have been dangerous for him to go charging into the palace and accuse David of adultery and murder. After all, David had arranged Uriah's death. He could certainly ensure that Nathan could meet with an accident. Perhaps he could tell David that he'd been sitting, reading the Ten Commandments, and how he especially liked the one that said, "Do not kill," and the other one, "Do not commit adultery." But instead, Nathan tells the story we heard read to us this morning. A story about how a rich man, who had so much, had taken a lamb belonging to a poor man, the only one he had, and the one he had treasured, and the rich man had used it to feed his guest. Of course David was outraged. He wanted justice for the poor man. He wanted the rich man punished. We read, didn't we, David burned with anger against the man and said to Nathan, "As surely as the Lord lives, this man who did this must die. He must pay for that lamb four times over, because he did such a thing and had no pity." And you can almost hear the EastEnders theme tune starting up now, da-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum, when Nathan drops the bombshell. Then Nathan said to David, "You are that man." David is overcome with remorse for his sin, rather than anger with Nathan. And Nathan is able to tell David that God will forgive him, but there will be consequences to his sin. The child born as a result of his affair will not survive. Nathan's approach is successful. Not only does he survive the God-given task to point out the sin of a powerful king, but David repents and is forgiven. The burden of guilt is removed. Nathan was a mouthpiece for truth and justice. But given that most of us are not called to approach a powerful king with such an alarming message, how can we be mouthpieces for truth and justice? Firstly, perhaps we need to recognise that the truth is really important to God. In John 14, verse 6, Jesus told him, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one can come to the Father except through me." The way, the truth, and the life. And in John 8:32, from the New Living Translation, we read, and you can know the truth, and the truth will set you free. Jesus is the truth, who can be known, who can set us free. Sadly, in modern life, truth is something that is not highly valued. It has been said, how do we tell when a politician is lying? Their lips are moving. How sad that we cannot trust those who are elected to public office. And I'm sure this cynical view is an exaggeration. But we've all experienced, haven't we, those who make promises during election and fail to deliver them once elected. In the workplace, it's common for secretaries to be asked to tell a caller that the boss is out, that the cheque is in the post, that the email was not received. Your invoice must have gone astray. Yes, your payment will be on the next payment run. Not saying when that is. Maybe at school. The dog ate my homework. I finished the assignment, but I've left it at home by mistake. I wasn't feeling well. But if truth is important to God, it needs to be important to us too. And being a mouthpiece for truth can be risky and costly. We don't have to look far to see how the prophets were often treated for telling the truth. People don't want to hear it. Nathan was clever in giving an illustration that David could see the injustice before he recognised his own behaviour was equally unjust. But lots of prophets just gave the message boldly, and many of them were beaten, ostracised, imprisoned. Stephen was stoned to death, and Jesus was crucified. Nathan spoke out for truth and justice, and justice is also really important to God. In Amos 5 we read, but let justice roll on like a river, righteousness like a never-failing stream. Maybe we need Nathan's wisdom if God calls us to challenge an injustice or an untruth. When a person is being bullied, when government makes policies that disadvantage the poor, the marginalised, the disabled, when people are rewarded for work done by a colleague. There are lots of situations around us, some quite small, others mega, that as mouthpiece for truth and justice, we should be challenging. Maybe it's just a quiet word with the boss. Maybe it's seeking the right support from someone who needs help. Maybe writing a letter to our MP. Maybe raising a concern with a teacher, or a social worker, or even a community officer. It has been said, hasn't it, that for evil to triumph, good people only have to do nothing. To be a mouthpiece for truth and justice means action. We need to do something. The company that I retired from, a charity, has a list of values that they are hoping that everyone in the organisation will adhere to. And one of the values is challenging injustice. And these are a few testimonies from people within the company that have been published this week. How they challenged injustice. I think they're mainly from family workers who work with children in schools, helping those that are absent for periods of time and no reason given. So they follow up on that and find out if there's problems at home and try and give support. So here's some of their testimonies. I challenged injustice with a family when other agencies dismissed the need for ECHP. That's a document, a very powerful document, that helps a child get the support that they need for their child. I supported both mother and child to explain and for them to understand this process, gather evidence, and have their voices heard. By challenging the assumption that the child wouldn't meet the threshold, I helped to ensure their needs were not overlooked and that they had the opportunity to access the right support. I challenged injustice with a family who are living in temporary accommodation. Their property was damp and some areas unsafe. Despite the family's repeated requests, repair reports for several months, no further action had been done. This family had a lack of awareness of their rights, which also was hindered by their language barrier. I supported the family to use internal complaints process and signposted them to a service to do better understand the housing system and their rights. This has really helped the family build their confidence and better engage with the housing officer. I challenged injustice by advocating for a mother whose housing needs were not met by professionals. There was no joined up thinking between services, with various team members of these services passing these needs around without solutions. I attended meetings with the mother to ensure her voice was heard, asking the questions she didn't feel confident in asking, and challenging professionals to justify their decisions. This helped the mother to feel listened to, respected, and treated fairly. I challenged injustice when a parent came to me as she felt she was unfairly dismissed from her job. And this parent is appealing with this dismissal. I have been guiding her with relevant services and knowledge and supported her in completing her court statement. I will continue this support and I will be in attendance of the court hearing. Just a few ways some ex-colleagues of mine have been challenging injustice. Have they given you ideas of people around you who might be suffering injustice and that you might be able to support and help? That you might be able to take some form of action that will bring some fairness to their situation? What things do you see that are unjust? What truths could you challenge? Remember, these things are really important to God and they need to be really important to us too. And remember, for evil to triumph, good people have to do nothing. So if we're going to achieve things, we need to take action. We need to speak out. We need to do something. Staying quiet is not an option. Amen.